Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your voicemails, your text messages. That's what we're doing today. Every single Wednesday, we do mailbag here where we answer your text messages, tweets, social media reaction, and most importantly, your voicemails. So drop us a line if you've got a question or you just want to react to something. 331-979-1369, the place to do that. Matt, happy Wednesday. Playoffs have been good to me. I hope they were as good to you, at least watching these last few series. Last night in particular was really nice, seeing the Spurs and the Nuggets, and even two nights ago, which we didn't even talk about, was the greatest comeback in NBA playoff history with the Golden State Warriors going down.
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Yeah, I've been pretty entertained, man. Got another nice slate of games on deck tonight. But obviously that Clippers comeback was insane. Nobody saw that coming. I mean, you're down 30 to the Warriors. Nobody has any kind of hope there. But you mentioned Pat Bev. Obviously, his defense on Durant and their beefing has already become a big storyline of the playoffs. Really fun. And of course, all that does is double down on Bulls fans' excitement about maybe going after a guy like Pat Bev in free agency this offseason. But the more he balls out in the playoffs, the more expensive his price tag is going to be. So Bulls fans need to keep that in mind because he's on a very team-friendly deal this year. I think he's making only like $5 million. I would say it's a safe bet that he gets offers that are at least double that this summer as a very valuable veteran guy. How about his teammate Lou Williams? My God, that guy, yeah, he's a perennial Sixth Man of the Year candidate. Everybody knows that he's one of the best microwave scorers in this league, but to do that against the Warriors at the Oracle, he poured in like 17 points in the third quarter alone that night in their amazing comeback. Like, that guy's just special to watch, man. I've always admired and respected Lou Williams, but as far as guys outside of the stars that everybody's watching in these playoffs, you know, Steph and KD, Harden, Giannis, Kawhi in Toronto, who's already had some big games, like, Lou Williams is maybe one of the most entertaining second-tier players in this league for these playoffs so far. And it might even be disrespectful to call him second-tier. Honestly, like, that's how good he is.
Yeah, I think if you look around the league, he's probably, pick anybody off anybody's bench, I mean, he's got to be in the conversation for the best, right? If not the best person to be coming off your bench. It's incredible. Like, thinking about his career, he started in Toronto, which feels like a lifetime ago, right? The last time we saw him in Toronto, and then he went to LA, had the dip, and that's just a weird time, but a good contract for the Rockets to get on, and then the Clippers get on it, and he's now continuing to light it up. So it's kind of cool when those guys that are underrated start to go off, when they go to different places and the expectations or the pressure is in his eye, and that's kind of what it was with the Clippers, I felt like, this year. But the Clippers have a handful of those guys that are just like, I don't want to say try-hard players, but it's like, kind of forgotten about younger guys that all of a sudden have turned it around. Like, even think about Gallinari, too, on that team, who has been incredible for them. So they made some pretty good moves. Like, after moving Tobias and moving a couple other pieces and thinking they were going to tank, now they find themselves in the playoffs and making a comeback from 31 points, I thought was incredible.
And really happy to see Denver bounce back. And even that series, you know, even as the significantly higher seed, everybody was looking at that as certainly a maybe not a likely upset, but best odds at an upset in round one going against, you know, Pop and his always ready for playoff action Spurs. And it looked like the Nuggets were on their way to an 0-2 hole after having played the first two games at home. But to see them fight back in that game. They were down almost 20, I want to say. Like they were down by 19 at one point. And Jamal Murray, who has just been so much fun to watch all season, he cooked the Bulls a couple times this year when the Bulls faced off against Denver. He did not have a strong start to that series and especially was really struggling through the first three quarters of that game two against the Spurs. But he fought back and had some big buckets as they were fighting back against the Spurs to even that series. So really excited to see where that goes from here.
Yeah, on top of that, you got the Trailblazers. You got that game with Enes Kanter, who went off in his first game. Like, thinking about a guy who was, I mean, at the end of the bench on a tanking team just this year with the Knicks, and then he goes to Portland and has a really, really good game. Playoffs have been fantastic, though.
Also,
I think it's been a lot of fun to watch.
Also, how great is Dame, man? Ah, dude. Damian Lillard is special.
Talk about a guy. Yeah. Talk about a guy you want to surround your team with, and you just want to be the face of your franchise, man.
And if I'm remembering correctly, he was on that top tier of players who got votes in that players poll that The Athletic did last week as far as most underrated players in the league. So Damian Lillard's peers know how special he is, and for some reason, whether it's just all of the talented guards that are in the Western Conference or whatever, the guy seems to get overlooked regularly for maybe not all-star appearances, but certainly all NBA teams. The guy is just absolute stones in big playoff moments. He had another really impressive buzzer beater in that game too. At the end, I want to say it was at the end of the third quarter, right? The guy's just really fun to watch and probably one of the more underrated players in the league right now.
It's kind of crazy. You look at that most underrated list, 116 votes from The Athletic, and you're right. CJ McCollum got 5.1% of the vote, and he was ranked third along with Kemba Walker, Lou Williams, too, on this list. Bradley Beal. But Damian Lillard tied with Chris Middleton for second most underrated, 6.8% with Chris Middleton. Jrue Holiday was at the top of that list with 16.3% of the vote. But there's a lot of guys in this playoff that are on this list. Spencer Dinwiddie, Joe Harris, Steven Adams, Pascal Siakam, Nikola Jokic, Tobias Harris, and Malcolm Brogdon, and D'Angelo Russell. So there's almost every single player on this most underrated list is in the playoffs in some form. So it's kind of crazy. Let's get to the main bulk of our conversation, and that's taking your text messages and voicemails. You can do that at 331-979-1369. We got a ton of voicemails to get into, Matt. I'm excited. Just within a week with the news of the press conference and potential Jim Boylan extension, some thoughts from and reaction from fans about the Rose documentary, and a bunch of other stuff, too, just leading into the draft. So let's get right to that.
Yo, what's up, guys? I'm trying to find some positive things about this Boylan extension. And the only thing I could come up with is February and probably the Zach relationship. That's probably it. Other than that, this is going to be a shit show for the next few years, probably two, hopefully. But other than that, guys, I think Paxton, he was honest about the exit interview yesterday about Chris Dunn and the free agency shit. But other than that, the perspective on the draft, how it's going to affect us, because I feel like we don't get a top two pick. Like, we can really chase a free agent with a top two pick. We get Zaya or Morant. We could probably call people and say, hey, do they come along with us? Probably that. Or if not, I feel like if we don't get that top two pick, we should trade out of the draft and not give up our first-round pick. We should give it up this year, but future years, no. But I feel we should get Conley. I really believe the Grizzlies are going to sell low. Conley wants to win the championship, and I feel like we have some money to put together to size free agents to make a playoff run this year if Paxton is really serious. Thanks, guys. Let me know your opinion.
What's the value if the Bulls get the first or the second pick? And what's the value if they're going to trade out of that if they land 3-7? Obviously, it decreases more, but do you kind of agree with him that the Bulls would be probably more likely to trade the second pick than the first. I can't see them wanting to trade Zion other than for like somebody like AD. But what's your reaction to this? What do you think about trading the picks, where they would land, and what the value is?
Well, first of all, I would say that if the Bulls get not the number one pick, but the number two pick, based on the amount that they have, amount of time that they've spent scouting Ja, unless they spent all that time watching him to decide and reach the conclusion that they don't like him and think that his ceiling in the NBA is not that high, honestly, I would be surprised if they don't just keep the pick and take Ja Morant. You heard John Paxson say that depending on how things play out, and it might be the draft and it might be free agency and it might be both, they know the point guard is a position that they need to address and they will address it. So to me, you know, nobody's selling the one pick because anybody's going to take Zion, right? But if the Bulls have number two, I don't necessarily see them selling that. I see them saying, all right, we got the number two pick. That's a win. Depending on whatever is out there, we might also look to add a veteran point guard, but we're not going to pass up on the star potential of a very young Ja Morant. So that, you know, that's it to me. And I think I had said it previously when we were talking about draft potentials and draft night trade potentials. If it's something outside of those top two, that is when I think the odds increase of the Bulls maybe looking to deal down out of the top part of that lottery and not completely sell their pick and most likely get a later first round pick in return to find a guy that they like in the middle of the draft and get an asset with it, maybe also selling off one of their pieces that they currently have on their roster, whether it's Chris Dunn or someone else. And then to this caller's final point about the Grizzlies potentially selling low on Mike Conley and he would love the Bulls to go out and add Mike Conley to this roster, I think it's not a wild claim to suggest or to guess that knowing where the Grizzlies are now, there's a decent chance that they could be looking to sell Conley and would sell low on him given his contract and the situation that the team is in. How low? I'm not sure. And to the point about, well, you know, Conley wants to compete for a championship and that's nowhere close to where the Grizzlies are, so they might just do him a favor and sell him off to a different team. I'm sorry. Are you suggesting that the Bulls are significantly closer to a championship than the Grizzlies? Because I don't see that. I mean, the Bulls might be in a little bit better of a position. They might have a little bit more promising of a collection of young talent right now, but I don't think that if you're talking about convincing Conley to go to a team because he's chasing a championship, Chicago is not that team right now.
Yeah, no, and you know, you think about it from his perspective. I mean, I don't know if he has a no trade clause. I don't think he does, but even still, I think he's talked about it too. Is staying in Memphis was important, and I mean, wouldn't he be? It would be more accelerated than it is in Memphis, but wouldn't he be doing something similar to what he's doing with the Bulls, what he's doing with the Grizzlies right now? I mean, I think so. Another team that's really interested in him, and I think is the favorite to land him this summer, is the Utah Jazz. They've been already rumored. They've been rumored at the trade deadline to be in serious talks with the Grizzlies, and it didn't work out. So if they're going to move him, I would imagine Utah would be back in play. And Utah, it was rumored that Utah offered their first-round pick this year and Grayson Allen as a starting point for Mike Conley at the trade deadline. So that's where you're going to start as far as value and being able to trade for him. So I don't know if they're going to sell low on him, man. When's the next time the Grizzlies are going to be able to attract a free agent star and actually have a franchise built unless they draft somebody or unless Jaren Jackson Jr. turns into that? Like, when's the next time they have that? Also, the pick from Memphis, they're protected 1-8. If that pick slides out of the 8th spot and slides down, they have to convey that pick. So that might pressure them more if they want to get into this draft to continue the rebuild that they're on, as opposed to, are you just going to go into next year and continue doing what you were doing? I don't know if that's the best plan either. So maybe it's a good look to keep your eye on Memphis as far as where their pick is too.
And it looked at some point like, you know, the Grizzlies might be one of those teams, you know, gearing towards not first tier, but second tier lottery odds. But a lot of teams somewhere in, you know, in the month of March made a hard steer for the tank. And Dallas was one of those teams that, you know, they rested Luka for some games and they rested some other players. And then at the end of the season, you had Memphis, Pelicans, Dallas all tied with the same record, 33-49. The Wizards, despite Bobby Portis's best wishes, did not make a playoff push, and they tanked their way to 32-50. So as far as how that that draft lottery next month shakes out, the Grizzlies are maybe not in as great a shape as they had hoped coming into the home stretch.
Mike Conley, 21.1 points, 6.4 assists, 3.4 rebounds, 1.3 steals in 70 games this year. Shooting 43.8% from the field, 36.4 from three on six attempts per game, which is nice to see. His effective field goal percentage is 50.7, so that's also good to see too. So that's why his field goal percentage is a little bit dipped. But still, I can see it, but the money is just, there's too much money there, I think. And I still think a player like Utah makes more sense than maybe the Bulls, just because the money's going to be hard to work with too there. Mike Conley, I think, is owed north of $32 million next year. So that's another problem and an issue. So thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I was just listening to the pod now, and I was obviously hearing all of John Paxson's comments when we were talking about how we've had the most injuries and, boy, since Derrick Rose probably. We've had Jeff Tanaka on the bench since then, I believe. The trainer before him, Fred Tredeschi, was a bum. He got out of there because of, obviously, Derrick Rose's knees. And yet we still have the same amount of injuries, if not more. And then I saw today a report on HoopsRumors.com that Dave McMiniman reported that the Lakers got rid of their head trainer after 1 year of a bunch of injuries occurring to their team. But yet John Paxson rings off Chip Schaefer and saying he's got the credentials, or as good as credentials as anyone. Well, you know what? Just fire the man at this point, because somebody there's got out there who's got better credentials, or if not the same. And I just, like, if it's not going to be you, then start firing other people around you, John Paxson. At least fix the other problems. Let me hear you guys' thoughts on that. Thank you.
Bye. The one thing I will say about this is, to start, I don't think this is all on John Paxson either. Like, this goes back to who the Reinsdorfs want to keep around, and being kind of a mom and pop shop run like a franchise. So it makes sense why he hasn't been fired. And some of those decisions might not be on Paxson. And, like, you don't know if he's got to get it approved from Reinsdorf. So I won't throw all the shade on John Paxson, but still, like, to name drop your strength and conditioning coach and talk about the medicals the way he did, I thought was very, very odd, coming off the one of the worst seasons in a decade as far as injuries go. Look, man, you don't have any arguments for me. I still have a lot of questions about what's going on there, just beyond the stupid luck that happens in the NBA throughout seasons.
Yeah, it's fair to point out, well, look, this team fired their trainer, and by the way, it's Marco Nunez was the head trainer for the Lakers, and they fired him a week ago today, last Wednesday, shortly after Magic Johnson made his shocking announcement to step down. And the Lakers players collectively missed 212 games due to injury this 18-19 season, ninth most in the NBA. You know who had more missed games due to injury than that? Our team. I think the Bulls were somewhere like north of 250 collective missed games due to injury, something crazy like that. So it's fair to ask that question, and it's not a new one. You know, Jordan, you and I have had a lot of people ask us about this. Like, why is it? Because it doesn't seem like a coincidence anymore at this point with all these injuries. Some of them are freak injuries that you can't help. Chris Dunn falling on his face being the most obvious answer after a dunk. But there are enough of them that it makes you wonder why. Why did John Paxson come out and say, as part of a season-ending press conference, we still have all the faith in the world in our strength and medical staff, whether it's Chip Schaefer or Jeff Tanaka or whoever else is on that staff, to say that we don't feel like we need to make any changes. These are our guys. And even to go beyond that, and one of the things that really bugged me about Paxson in his conference, and I think we may have touched on this before, but to suggest that if there's some injury, you know, bug that's hurting the Bulls, it's because the players themselves are not fully utilizing everything at their disposal at the Advocate Center. And Jordan, I think you mentioned that that's really just because Paxson and the Bulls are obsessed with keeping those guys in their building in the offseason, which certainly is true. And we've had many examples of that, notably recently, talking with Markkanen about how much time he can spend in Finland, Niko Mirotic wanting to play for his national team and all that stuff. But, I mean, it's fair to wonder why a team out there, a big market team like the Lakers, who also have been accused of operating not as a big market team that they are, but a, you know, small family business, the way that Jeannie Buss has gotten some of that flack recently, just like the Bulls have gotten over the past several years. It's fair to make the question and make that parallel to say, all right, well, this is a problem that the Lakers pointed out and they did something to rectify it and made a progressive decision to move in a different direction. Why aren't the Bulls doing the same thing? I wish I had an answer for you. I don't.
Just real quick, Jeff Tanaka was the assistant athletic director. He was hired in 2008 and promoted in 2014. So he was here for 5 years before he was promoted to head athletic trainer, and he's still here today. Look, it's not all his fault, and it's not certainly not all the medical staff's fault, but there are some serious questions, and I'm just looking at this season, man. Denzel Valentine's injury and how that happened, I thought was very bizarre. I mean, he went from going week to week to missing the entire season.
You call it bizarre. I call it completely predictable.
I mean, it is, but what they said and then what happened is my question here, you know. And then the Chandler Hutchison thing too was so weird. And I know that was partly on, like, Chandler Hutchison said he didn't feel anything and the doctors didn't see anything in their initial tests, but then he went out and played 40 plus minutes in a Clippers game and then missed the rest of the season because of that.
Right. And why didn't the doctors see anything in their initial tests? Get better doctors.
Thanks for the call though. Appreciate it.
Hey guys. So the Bulls season is over. I just wanted to comment on, looking back, the top five overreactions that happened throughout this season. And these are my top five. Let me know what you guys think and what your top five overreactions are. But my number five overreaction is that the Bulls are cheap, and particularly, I forget what it was, but during the preseason or offseason, there was that European prospect camp or something like that where the Bulls didn't participate and it was $15,000. I mean, it's $15,000. They spend that in 5 seconds, in 2 minutes, whatever. So it's not that the Bulls didn't want to spend $15,000. They just didn't believe in that. And there were other, from what I read, there were other types of prospect camps that were being held that their European guy had attended, and he was more connected. So that's my top number five, that the Bulls are cheap, and specifically because of that $15,000 camp that the Bulls didn't participate. Number four, that Boylan is a horrible coach. Yeah, he's not the best, but he definitely connects with the players. He's got a system as far as paint touches. When you don't have a lot of good three-point shooters, might as well establish your fundamentals with going in the paint, whether it's driving or being in the post, and that really makes sense. You don't jack up threes just to jack up threes. Number three is that Wendell Carter Jr. is an untouchable asset. And this one is pretty high on my list because Wendell, he may be great, but he is not untouchable. I mean, he didn't have a great season. He's an undersized center. He didn't show any three-point shooting capability. So what are his standout skills? Being able to rotate on help defense and foul? That doesn't show a lot of defensive IQ that everyone was saying, oh, he's got such great IQ, but then he's falling out every other game, which Robin Lopez does. Maybe he doesn't rotate as well, but come on, learn how to rotate, learn how to challenge without causing a foul. So he is not untouchable. I don't see any tangible skills that when you're a big man, you have to have a superstar talent to be called untouchable. Number two, that Jabbar was a horrible signing. And number one, that Lopez needs to be bought out, and that was right after the trade deadline.
All right, so just to go over that again real quickly, Jordan, we have overreaction to the Bulls not paying and sending a scout to that prospect camp in Europe, which, you know, certainly there was a lot of reaction to that. Jim Boylan being a bad coach and not caring enough about shooting threes and caring too much about scoring in the paint. Wendell Carter Jr. being a high-ceiling, untouchable player on this roster, Jabari's horrible signing, and Rolo not being bought out. Those are the five most overreaction moments for Bulls fans this season, according to this caller. What are your thoughts on one or two of those?
I think the funny thing is overreacting to the Jim Boylan thing first, about him playing inside out and not being a huge fan of the three-pointer, at least not thinking that's the number one philosophy. I'll just say take a look at this playoff right now, right? Look at the teams that are shooting a lot of threes and look at the teams that are playing inside out. Like, granted, I feel like the Clippers are an outlier here. You know, they're a team that shoots very, very efficiently from three when they do take them normally. If you look at their season past, I think they were in the bottom five along with the Bulls as far as three-point attempts per game. But you see them. They could beat they beat the Warriors by having a majority of the time having a way to play inside out. So that kind of reminds me. But they're an outlier. Every other team, I feel like if they've won, they've shot really well from three, and they've used that as a sticking point as far as looking at all these playoff teams. So that's not really an overreaction. And the other one, too, was Wendell Carter Jr. Like, we've talked about Wendell Carter Jr. not being off the table. I think the only player on this team, I think, right now off the table is Lauri Markkanen. And maybe even Zach LaVine. But I don't think he is, considering the contract he's on and what you can get for him. So,
First of all, I don't think that there is a huge portion of the fan base who believes that Wendell is untouchable.
I don't think so either.
That being said, though, I still feel like this caller is really shortchanging the potential that Wendell has. It is true that he did not really shoot the three ball confidently as a rookie. He only took 41 or 42 of them in his 1 year at Duke. So it's not like everyone expected that to immediately be part of his offensive arsenal as a rookie. And his point about the, you know, committing bad fouls and, you know, maybe being a decent help defender, but still not figuring it out and not feeling like Wendell's basketball IQ is that high, disagreeing with the evaluators saying that Wendell does have a high IQ. I disagree completely with that. I think Wendell does have a high basketball IQ. And yes, he had some games where he struggled with foul trouble this season. Guess what? He was a 19-year-old rookie being asked to guard tons of the league's elite bigs, and there are so many of them right now. You know, Blake Griffin and Nikola Jokic, just to name a couple that I recall from earlier in this season. But he's he just turned 20 yesterday. Can we all pump the brakes on calling Wendell a low ceiling player? Like, really? I don't think he's untouchable. I agree with our caller in that respect. But to say that this 19-year-old kid, who we saw a small sample size from in rookie year that was unfortunately short-ended by injury, his defensive upside is humongous. We also saw him have games dropping in 20 to 30 points and making it look pretty effortless. So just as a Wendell defender and a Wendell stan right now, agree he's not untouchable. But to question his basketball IQ based on some foul trouble as a 19-year-old rookie, who was, by the way, probably one of a couple of people actually trying to play defense for the Bulls this season, give me a break.
That is kind of funny that he mentioned the global camp as one of the biggest overreactions. I think
I do agree with him there. The overreaction to that was insane.
Well, now you look at the player list too that even came out, and I will admit I was pretty pissed off about that back in the summer. I think the reaction, though, maybe just to build off of this, felt like one of the biggest overreactions was to all the cash consideration moves. If you really thought about it from the logistical standpoint of what the Bulls were giving up and what they had to do to acquire all three of those moves, yes, it didn't look good optically, but there was probably more of an overreaction, and maybe not even from the first one, but from the second and the third that came. And it's like, all right, we saw these moves already be made a few weeks ago. We know why they're doing that. So maybe there's a little overreaction to that, too.
Right. In both cases, the cash considerations moves with OKC and Houston, and then also with the Euro camp that they didn't pay to go to, they were overreactions because they fed the narrative that fans already were staunchly believing and didn't want to hear any counter arguments to, which is this team is cheap, which is what the caller brings up, and he's right about
Another funny one was Robin Lopez, the overreaction to not buying him out. I would say I was more angry at what John Paxson said, why they weren't participating in that or having those conversations. It was almost like they were taking a stand against everybody else in this trend in the NBA.
Against buyouts. Yeah, just in general. Oh, but we were willing to buy out Dwayne Wade after that catastrophic signing. So I guess there are some exceptions that can be made.
So thanks for the call. That was good. It got my mind kind of rolling. We went best and worst, but he went to biggest overreactions, which is great. I thought that's good because there's a lot of shit that happened throughout this season.
How, guys? How's it going? I was calling about the bad news we got yesterday. It was almost like losing Lauri Markkanen to an ACL or something when I heard or saw the Jim Boylan extension go across my iPhone screen. But I don't want to dwell on the bad news. I want to try to make light of the situation in free agency. What if in free agency we took all our cap space, which I hear is $20 million, and just try to give it to Malcolm Brogdon? I don't think Milwaukee can hold on to everybody. You put Malcolm Brogdon as our point guard. You take our pick we get this year, both of them, the first and the second, and maybe add like two veterans to the bench, like Wayne Ellington and Anthony Tolliver, somebody cheap, and re-sign Rolo. And I think we got a good team, you know, good top six team or so, if barring health. And I think every team can say barring health, because I do think if we wouldn't have got injured this year, we probably would have squeezed in the eighth spot or so, because I do think we're better than Detroit. I think we're better than Orlando, and I think we're right there with Brooklyn. So, and better than Charlotte and Miami that didn't make the playoffs. So just give you my thoughts. You guys have a nice day. Thanks, guys.
What do you think about this summer and specifically Malcolm Brogdon, which I think is an interesting one considering we just found out that he's seeking somewhere around 4 years, $60 million this summer. I don't know if he's going to get that, especially with the untimely injury that he had late in the season.
More likely to get it than Bobby. Yeah, it's just one of those instances where you don't know what a player is going to command on the free agent market until we get there. I think it's certainly a fair estimation to say that Brogdon's going to receive some offers from outside of Milwaukee this summer. Some of it will depend on what we see Milwaukee do in this run through the playoffs. And they certainly handled game one in dominant fashion. They got their game two tonight, right? Bucks Pistons game two tonight at 7 Central. If the Bucks make their way through the Eastern Conference and become the new Kings of the East without LeBron and go to the finals, and even if they don't win the finals, but if they go to the finals, I think then suddenly that becomes a big factor. And, you know, maybe right now and over the last couple of months, Brogdon and his agent have been throwing out a number, but if he realizes that he is an important piece on a team that has Giannis and just went to the finals, maybe he's willing to take a little bit less money to stay in that great situation. So it might cost even more money to pry him away from a pretty good thing he's got in Milwaukee right now. And could the Bulls be the team that outbids everybody for his services if that's the case? I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, the weird thing is about his injury, too. I wonder how he's going to recover from that. He had a minor plantar fascia tear in his right foot, and that was in the middle of March, so he's out indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how that's going to affect his value. I said to you, I thought he was going to make maybe more than Eric Bledsoe got in his extension a couple months ago, but now with that, the foot tear and being 26, and this was his best season overall, but I don't know about that. But my point about Bobby Portis, though, I was thinking about this, and just not even Malcolm Brogdon, but point guards in general this summer, Matt. Do you think the Bulls are going to take what they originally offered to Bobby? And I know Otto wasn't around and things were a little bit different, but still, considering having that 4 year, 50 some million dollar deal not happen, do you think they'll take that and maybe be a little bit more aggressive and be a little bit more expansive with their cap? Or do you think they would play around with the idea of spending maybe a little bit more to lock somebody up of a little bit better of a tier like a Malcolm Brogdon?
Ooh.
Or even like a Ricky Rubio.
That's
think if the Utah Jazz get Mike Conley this summer, they're definitely not going to re-sign Ricky Rubio.
Right.
And both of those guys kind of fall in that same spot, you know, that same space of somewhere between 12 and 15 million, maybe a little bit less than 12 million, maybe 10 to 15 million a year. But do you think they'll take a gamble like that since they didn't have to pay Bobby?
I mean, maybe. But I say that with such little confidence. I mean, we know that in the entirety of the time that the Bulls have existed in the era of the luxury tax and the cap threshold, they have been a team in the luxury tax once. Is that correct? Once, I believe one season the Bulls have spent paying luxury tax. The third largest market team in the league, 1 year from Reinsdorf paying luxury tax. That, more so than the hashtag cash considerations and not paying 10 grand to go watch some, you know, Euro players in some camp, speaks to the cheapness of this organization and the fact that they care more about money than they care about winning. So if the Bulls find themselves a year or two or three down the road where they have something with this young core, LaVine and or Markkanen develop into all-star caliber players, they make a big jump in the East to go from a basement dweller to a team that is now in the middle of the crowd fighting for, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth seed, something like that, and really want to make a big signing to push them over the top and make them one of the big threats in the East again. And again, I'm saying this is something that's maybe not even 3 years down, maybe as, you know, as soon as 2 years down the road, could be as late as 5 years from down the road from now. But I'm just saying when that day comes, you might see this team say, you know what, we're going to do it. We're going to bite the bullet. We're going to go above the cap. We're going to pay the luxury tax because we want to bring this guy. This is the missing piece to really get us over the hump and make us a real threat to win the East this year. But to do that and overpay and go above the cap next year, to add a piece like that, when how far does that really push the needle? And you know that you're realistically not contending for a title next season. Knowing this ownership group, no, I would not expect them to enter the luxury tax situation for at least another few years.
I think when you look at Malcolm Brogdon, he gets a little bit more interesting too. 42.6% from three this year on nearly four attempts. And the one thing that I keep saying he's interesting is think about the way Boylan is going to play with this team and the way that the Bulls played the most successfully. It wasn't with a point guard per se, right? It was with multi-ball handler system. That's kind of what we talked about. What's interesting about Brogdon is he's played most of his minutes at the two. And throughout his career, he's only played 34% of his minutes at point guard, and that came in his second season, which actually he had a dip when he was asked to play most of his minutes at point guard, or his highest minutes at point guard. But he played 84% of his minutes at the two this year, which he can be slotted at the point guard. And then you could talk about maybe the idea of him and Zach LaVine being a multi-ball handler system, you know, not having to play point guard.
Those pro LaVine point guard people are real happy with the sound of that.
Yeah, and it wouldn't even be LaVine playing the point guard. It would be like Brogdon is at the one, but when you come back on offense, he doesn't have to be the main ball handler. Your main ball handler would be Zach LaVine.
And can shoot threes in a way that is slightly more efficient than, say, Chris Dunn or any of the other point guards the Bulls have had in the last 2 years.
So I'm not taking him off the board, and you're right about Milwaukee probably still having a lot of interest. I wonder what they're gonna do with their cap situation, though, depending on how much they're gonna have to pay Chris Middleton and what they already just signed Eric Bledsoe to.
What's going on, fellas? It's Nicholas from Chicago. Just checking in one more time with you guys. Long time no talk. Wanted to touch in on this Derrick Rose saga that's going on. Hey, Matt, remember last year around this time, or maybe 2 months from now, last year, it was right after the draft, we had selected Wendell, and that's when the Jabari news really got heavy, and everybody was like, we need Jabari, Jabari's going to be great. All the Jabari stands, well, let me just put it frank, 98% of Chicagoans were all for Jabari coming back to Chicago because it was going to be a great move. It's going to be a restart for him. He's refreshed. His ACL is gone. Everything is just good. This is going to be great. He can provide so much offensive firepower for us, and it's just going to be great. We need to sign Jabari. Jabari is what we need. I hopped on, left a voicemail saying, hey, Jabari is not what we need. We just selected Wendell Carter Jr. Jabari is a power forward. We have Laurie. We have Cristiano Felicio. Unfortunately, said nobody ever, but he was a body on our roster. We had Bobby Portis. We don't need that. It's going to be a logjam. Everybody wanted it. We got Jabari. Look what happened. Told you so. Now everybody wants Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose is going to be a leader for our locker room. He's a veteran. He can provide so much scoring. D. Rose is back. Chicago stands. Well, they're at it again, and they want Derrick Rose back. That's our point guard, whether it's backup or starter. No. No. Since his MVP year, you show me one healthy season from Derrick Rose. I'll wait. He's gone. He is a has-been. What he's doing in Minnesota is only because he's in Minnesota. He is a has-been. Let it go, Chicago. Let it go. He cannot do anything for us. We are a completely new team right now. We have so many young assets that are going to take off from here, and I'm excited to see that. And quite frankly, signing Derrick Rose will hinder that. That'll hinder the growth in ways that, man, if we get John Morant, great. Let him shine. Derrick Rose is in our rearview mirror. Let Chris Dunn go, please. But we got to get over this Derrick Rose thing. Lastly, Matt, to you about Derrick Rose. You touched on his court case outside of basketball. I want you to let that go because looking at it, you sound like you want closure on that subject. You want answers, but for what? If you don't want him to go to jail, you don't want him to serve time, what do you want answers for? You know what I'm saying? Just makes you look bad. Hope all is well with everybody. Hope we don't sign Derrick Rose, which I have a feeling we are because we're the laughing stock Chicago Bulls. But
first of all, thank you, Nicholas, for echoing my logic and reasoning from our Tuesday episode talking about why Derek's homecoming makes no sense and is a terrible idea for everyone involved. I appreciate you. In some ways, it is kind of similar to Jabari and similar to Wade in that if the Bulls do it, despite what stands are saying right now, it's not necessarily about basketball because I disagree even with the idea that Rose is a good fit basketball-wise on this team right now. He's not. People just want to believe that. And if the Bulls do make this move, it will not be about basketball. It will be about what Nicholas was saying. And it will be about the same things that Jabari and the Wade signings were about. It'll be about hype. It'll be about PR. It'll be the Bulls making a classic Bulls move, thinking inside the box and trying to appease a fan base that they think is stupid. And then I guess I would just touch on his last comment about what we were talking about, including in our review of the Derrick Rose doc, talking about how we felt like they glossed over some of the civil trial that he went through a couple years ago. For whatever reason, he felt like our discussion about that makes us look bad. Because if we don't think he should be in jail, then we should let it go. I'm sorry, Nicholas, I like you, buddy, and I appreciate you being a longtime listener, but how is there no middle ground there based on what you said? If you don't think Derrick Rose should be in jail, you should let it go instead of trying to hold out and look for answers. I didn't necessarily say I was looking for answers when we were talking about the Rose doc and the way that they glossed over the civil trial. I just said that based on the pitch we got for, you know, poo, the Derrick Rose story, the good, the bad, and the ugly from BJ Armstrong and others, they very much glossed over part of the ugly with that. And that I think for a lot of people, everyone is so quick to get on board an athlete's inspiring comeback story, whether it's Derrick Rose or whether it's somebody like Tiger Woods from the Masters last weekend, that people gloss over the ugly pretty quickly because they want their hero to get back on top. And people that lump an ACL tear and a rape accusation into the general category of overcoming adversity, I have a real problem with that because those two things are not the same. And to say if you don't think Derrick Rose should be in jail, and I'd never said that I think he should, then you should just let it go. I'm sorry, does that mean that I can't still feel uncomfortable with some of the things we heard and some of the things we learned about Derrick in that entire saga, which I followed start to finish and read all the documents and read every report of every day of that trial? And I'm not allowed to find some of that uncomfortable and add that to the list of reasons that I don't want Derrick Rose back in, on this Bulls team? Because I'm sorry, I'm pretty sure that there is allowed to be some gray area between wanting Derrick Rose behind bars and saying la-di-da, everything's fine, come back on board. I think there's a middle area there.
That's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Hit us up at 331-979-1369. You want to drop us a text message or a voicemail? Whatever you're thinking about, hit us up at 331-979-1369. We're on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com